Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. I'm your host, Joanna DeVoe, and this is a happy, hippie place where magic with a K meets the law of attraction. Hi, thanks for joining me for episode 88 of Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. My name is Joanna DeVoe, and I am the kooky creatrix behind Kick-Ass Switch, putting the K in magic, and of course, Hippie Witch, the show you are listening to right now. I also have a free ebook by that name, Hippie Witch, Peace, Love, and All That Good Shit, and you can pick up a copy of that at www.joannadevoe.com, and I've put a link to that on the description page for this episode back at Blog Talk Radio, as well as a link to the Psycho-Spiritual Wheel of the Year for those of you who are wanting to hop on the wheel and join us. Right now we're doing a lot of shadow work and releasing rituals and stuff like that. So there's a link there at Blog Talk if you want to check that out. And before I get started today, I have to tell you about my morning. This has nothing to do with today's topic, but it cracked me up. So I'm just going to tell you, in my tradition of being a rambly rambler. So Tanner, my son, does not have school today because it's Veterans Day. So we decided to go on a walk this morning, and we didn't get very far. Like, around the block, we came across this really cool bureau or dresser that I fell in love with, and I, like, opened the drawers and looked inside of it, and it was so clean, and somebody had put it out on the curb, because that's what we do here in Glendale. We put our furniture out on the curb when we don't want it, and then it sits there for, like, a week until the trash guys take it away. So we walked, I checked it all out, and I was like, wow, that's really cool. And we kept walking, and I was like, Tanner, do you think you could help me carry that back to the house? And he's like, yeah, okay, Mom. So I said, okay, let's go all the way around the block, and then we'll come back around, and we'll get it, and we'll carry it home. And so we tried. And the two of us, I mean, I'm pretty skinny and not very muscular, and my son, you may know he has autism, and so he's not, like, the most physical person. And we tried to carry this thing, like, one of us on either side, and we literally could only get, like, 4 feet before we'd have to set it down and rest. And I was trying to make it fun for him, and I'd be like, shake out your hands. Okay, let's see if we can get it across this driveway, because that was, like, the furthest we could do would be to get across someone's driveway. And we, like, inched our way down the street like this, and we live in a mostly Mexican immigrant neighborhood where most of the people don't speak English, and a lot of them will, like, sit out on their front lawns and patios and balconies in the morning. So we had an audience, and they were, like, laughing and chuckling at us, like, struggling down the road with this dresser. And finally, we got all the way to the end of the street, and this little lady came out, and she was like, oh, You need Dolly, wait, Dolly. So I'm like, okay, whatever she has to offer me, I'm going to wait, because this is hilarious. This is like a metaphor for Tanner and I's life. Like, we have just struggled and inched our way along, like, one little bit at a time. And it was actually making me laugh thinking about that. And this lady came out with a dolly, but because there was such a huge language barrier, she couldn't show me how to use it without showing me how to use it. And in the process of, like, getting the dresser up on the dolly, she scuffed the crap out of it. And I was kind of irritated, but I was thankful that she was helping me. So I was just like, okay, thank you, and trying to get away as fast as I could, and told her, I'll bring the dolly back. I'm just going around the corner. I'll bring the dolly back. And then in going around the corner into our alley, this is a long story, I'm sorry, I hope you're still with me. We have our neighbors, they're not homeless, that you might think they were homeless if you pass them, but they collect the trash to recycle, to get money for cans and glasses, so they dig in the dumpsters and trash cans, and it was like that time of day where they were all out. So we had this very tiny little old man. And when I say tiny, he was definitely closer to 4 feet tall than he was 5 feet tall. He was like somewhere in between, but like little itty bitty. And he was carrying a bag over his shoulders of cans and did not speak a word of English and decided that we were doing it wrong and tried to force us to like flip this dresser over and ended up scuffing the whole top of it, even worse. And I was like, I got it. And I was trying to get away from him to go down the alley. And Tanner, at this point, had just totally given up and was not helping me at all. So I was trying to hold the dresser and pull it. And I had these men that were digging in the trash cans micromanaging me and following me all the way down the alley. And we did finally get the dresser home and the dolly returned. But the dresser now is not in perfect condition, which is what made me want it in the beginning. And I really don't have a point to the story. It was just, it was funnier when it happened. I feel like I'm not really doing it justice, but I was just dripping in sweat and had to take a shower right away. It was like the funniest, worst workout ever. And poor Tanner, he's so nice. He's such a nice guy, but he did give up on me halfway through this whole journey. So, yeah. I don't know how that ties into believing is seeing, which is the theme today, but I'm just going to do a hard cut right now and start talking about today's topic. I hope your morning was equally interesting but less sweaty. Believing is seeing. That is what I want to talk about today, and it is a play on that whole, you know, seeing is believing. You know, a lot of skeptics might say that. People in the magical community like to say believing is seeing, and there's that Roald Dahl quote that has been made into like a jillion memes that say those who don't believe in magic will never find it, and that is very much true. And that has a lot to do with belief. Those who don't believe in magic will never find it. Because in a way, when you are skeptical, you're sort of wearing like skeptic glasses. They're like the opposite of rose-colored glasses. So you literally cannot see what other people are seeing when it comes to magic and things like that. And I don't know that either experience, the skeptic's experience is true or the believer's experience is true. I like to ask a lot of questions, so that is largely what this episode is going to be about, questioning things, picking them apart. I don't have any hard and fast answers for you for the most part, except for believing is seeing, and I want to kind of explore why that is true. So before we can get into why that is true, we have to define what a belief is. So this is the definition that I got offline on some online dictionary. Belief is a state or habit of mind in which trust or confidence is placed in some person or thing. It is a conviction of the truth of some statement or the reality of some being or phenomenon, especially when based on examination of evidence. And when I read that little part about examination of evidence, that makes me think of something that I did early on with Kick-Ass Switch. I think it was way back in 2012, way, way back in the day. I did a video and a blog post called To Believe or Not to Believe, Do You Have a Choice? And I remember a friend of mine said, no, she doesn't think that you have the choice in what you believe, that you have your beliefs and they can't be changed. This is funny. I'm getting into a little tongue twisters here, but I believe that you can change your beliefs. You've heard me, I'm sure, talk about Tony Robbins, and he's got like a cool little chapter in Awaken the Giant Within about changing your beliefs. So I was kind of like indoctrinated into that idea at the age of 17, and it's something that I've proven to myself through evidence that, yes, you can change your beliefs because I have personally changed my beliefs. So if we have time toward the end of the episode, I will pull that article up and maybe read parts of it to you. But that's not really what this is about, if you can change your beliefs or not, although it ties in. I'm a person that has a kind of simultaneous fascination with magic, the law of attraction, whatever you want to call it, whatever floats your boat, let's just call it magic. So I have this fascination with magic while at the same time I have this urge to kind of like pull back the curtain on the proverbial Wizard of Oz. I like to pick this stuff apart and question it. So, you know, last week I did that show called Losing My Religion. So in a lot of ways, my journey as a spiritual seeker has been about losing my religion over and over and over again, and like believing something and then disbelieving it, like through exploring it, through reading all of the evidence, through experimenting with it in my own life, coming to not believe in something that I previously believed in. I do not like to be made a fool of. I don't like to feel gullible. And that is probably because I have been called gullible in the past. I vividly remember the last time someone called me gullible, and it was actually over a decade ago. And it was at work when I worked at the WB, but it totally irritated me that this guy said that I was gullible. So I guess I have an oversensitivity to that, which is not a good thing to have when you're online talking about the law of attraction and magic and these things that some people think are just total hogwash and hooey, woo-woo, blah, blah, blah. So I guess what I'm really interested in specifically, if I had to give it a name, would be like the science of magic. I really love Lori Cabot and her student-turned-teacher, Christopher Pinsak, because they a large part of what they do is teach the science of magic, and I actually think that science and magic have a lot in common. Science, I wrote some definitions down today because I knew I was going to get into a tangle. I already have. I've only been talking to you for 12 minutes. I haven't said anything I want to say, and I'm just in a total tangle. This might be a two-part episode. Science is the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. That's what I feel like when I'm doing magic. I feel like I'm experimenting. I feel like I'm observing. I like to test out, you know, spells and the law of attraction. I love to test these things out, and I definitely have an open mind. There have been phases in my life when I had a deep, deep belief, and that is when my magic worked the best and the most amazingly. And then there are times when I was skeptical and kind of looking at it through that more scientific lens. And this is something really interesting, too, that happened this morning. I literally wrote down this question: once a phenomenon becomes measurable and observable, does it cease to be magic? Does magic have to remain a mystery in order to qualify as magic? I literally had that thought in my head, wrote it down on a piece of paper, and then went on Facebook to check on my people just to see what everybody was up to really quick. And I only had a second, so I went and checked out my friend Lenora Henson's page, and I kid you not, the top post on her Facebook page, the first thing that came up was a quote by Terry Pratchett, the author of Discworld, and it said, "It doesn't stop being magic just because you know how it works." How crazy is that? I literally just wrote, does magic have to remain a mystery in order to qualify as magic? And I mean seconds later, seconds, not even a full minute, I read, it doesn't stop being magic just because you know how it works. I thought that was super amazing. And if you are magically minded, you might call that synchronicity. If you're not, if you're more of a skeptic, you might call it the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. And I don't know if you know what this is, but it is fascinating. You might have heard me say Jack White is my rock god, because he is, because I love him. And I will listen to anything that he does, a record or an interview. And I remember it might have been an NPR interview that he did. It was an interview recently this year, and he was talking about how he discovered the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon and how disillusioned and kind of bummed he was to learn about what this was because he was assigning meaning to coincidences and seeing them as being more synchronistic and more meaningful than they actually turned out to be. So what the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon is, the human brain has a prejudice towards patterns. This prejudice is called the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. So our brains are pattern recognition machines, which actually helps us learn and ultimately survive in this world, to be able to recognize patterns. You know, it can keep us out of danger, for example. But it also means that we often overestimate the unusualness of coincidence, the specialness of it, or we place extra importance on fairly average, unremarkable events. So, wah, wah, wah. That is not half as fun or magical as the idea of synchronicity. I'm not saying synchronicity is not a real thing. I'm just saying this Bader-Meinhof phenomenon exists. Here's an example. If you get pregnant, all of a sudden it's like the whole rest of the world is pregnant. You see pregnant ladies everywhere you go, and people tell you stories like, oh, my daughter's pregnant, or my niece is pregnant, or you find out your best friend is pregnant. You just start noticing it everywhere. If you buy a VW Bug, all of a sudden, you know, you think it's like this cute trend, you know, like hipster, maybe unusual car kind of, and then all of a sudden, every time you turn the corner, you're seeing another VW Bug. It's not that those pregnant ladies weren't there already. It's not that those VW Bugs weren't there already. It's just that it has now entered into your awareness. And so you are seeing it everywhere you go because it's now on the forefront of your mind, and your mind is programmed or wired to recognize patterns. So that is how that works. And then when you throw in computer algorithms into the mix, it gets all screwed up because that has changed the game entirely, you know. So please know the fact that, you know, if you were just staring at that sweater on anthropology.com that you really, really wanted but you couldn't quite afford, so you ended up logging off and going and checking Facebook, and then magically that sweater appeared in the sidebar of your Facebook page, that is not actually a synchronistic sign from the universe that you need to buy that sweater. It is merely a sign that you are being technologically stalked and cleverly marketed to by XYZ Corporation. That is all. And then there's been a lot of synchronicities around this show, actually, or coincidences, or however you want to look at it. I had intended, and I did, do this Monday's Book Nerd Weekly post on a book by Norman Doidge called The Brain That Changes Itself. It's just a super fascinating book, and I thought it might be interesting to those of you who are interested in the law of attraction or magic, because this is not the purpose of the book, but in reading the book, it does kind of support the idea that positive thinking has the power to affect real change. It proves that your imagination and that the thoughts you have actually literally change the structure of your brain. And I thought that was so interesting. And then right as I was prepping that, and in the mix of that, I got an email from Frank Kern, who you may not know, but I don't have time to get into that because I see I'm running out of time. But he did an interview with a guy named John Assaraf. And this guy, John Assaraf, was promoting something called a brain-a-thon. And I was like, he's promoting a brain-a-thon. That's so weird, the brain that changes itself. Like, I have this whole thing about our brains and plasticity, neuroplasticity on my mind, and now this thing about this brain-a-thon pops up into my email box, which is unusual because Frank Kern is like a marketing money guy. He's not really into the law of attraction and the brain and all of that stuff. So I watched part of it, and basically it was an infomercial for this computer program that supposedly rewires your brain to be rich and successful, which I actually think is possible, but at like $999, I'm just going to have to take his word for it for now. But I think that's super interesting. I love Dave Asprey, the Bulletproof Executive dude, and all the other brain hackers that have done those really fascinating experiments on themselves using so-called smart drugs and whatever, a jillion other dietary, sleep, and exercise tweaks to change their brain and to change their experience of life. So this stuff truly fascinates me, and somehow in my mind it ties in with magic. And Norman Doidge, the guy who wrote the book, The Brain That Changed Itself, he had a couple of quotes that kind of tie into what I wanted to say today. And one was, the nervous system is an internal medium communicating messages from one area of the body to another. And it evolved to do for multi-celled organisms such as ourselves what the electronic media do for humanity. Connect disparate parts. I am sorry about that. This is what happens when I try to squeeze too much information into 30 minutes. So basically he's saying that our brains and the computer technology, they work so similarly that they actually work really well together, which would support this whole idea of this computer program that can rewire your brain to be rich and successful. He goes on to say electronic media are so effective at altering the nervous system because they both work in similar ways and are basically compatible and thus easily linked. How cool is that? This is a guy, John Assaraf, that got famous because he was featured in the movie for The Secret. And so being myself, I had to like dig around about this and look at the other books that he has out. And he has a book that looks a lot like The Secret called The Answer. And I was like, oh, let's read the reviews about this. So, of course, I had to go like right to the one-star reviews to see what people were saying about it, the disbelievers and the skeptics. And there was a reviewer who left a very long, thoughtful, intelligent review about why this book, The Answer, and everything to do with the law of attraction is bullshit. And it really boiled down to him saying that quantum physics is not science and that we know almost nothing about quantum physics, much less enough to be able to link it to these magical phenomenon that so many of us say we have experienced. And when I was reading that, I was thinking about, and you know what? We all know almost nothing about science in general. We think that we are really smart and we think we have a handle on this, but like I've said so many times, every time we try to like bypass nature or play God, we end up screwing ourselves over so bad. We really don't know. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know who we are. We don't even know what we are. We don't know what made us. And we make mistakes constantly. I watched The Nick, the Steven Soderbergh directed, TV show that was on Cinemax starring Clive Owen. It was super amazing. And it takes place in the last turn of the century. So, you know, from the 1800s turning into the 1900s. And it's largely focused around medical practices. And you're just like facepalming, you know, episode after episode because they're doing just crazy stuff. They believed cocaine was very therapeutic. They put cocaine in soda. They used it for everything. Like that was like their main drug at the hospital that they were giving everybody. And we know now that's not a great idea. Cocaine is highly addictive and will fuck our shit up. They did one episode where this woman, she kind of went crazy, and their way for dealing with this mental health disorder was to rip out all of her teeth because they thought that rotten teeth could lead to mental disabilities or disorders or being, you know, batshit crazy. So they literally ripped out all of her teeth. And in watching this and watching these things that they used to do back in the day, or if you think way, way back in the day when they used to do, like, bloodletting and stuff like that, you can think, oh, how barbaric, you know, we've come such a long way. But then I think there's so many things we do today that we're going to look back on 100 years from now and say the exact same thing. Some of the weird, funny business that's going on with certain vaccines, the chemtrails that are being sprayed in the air, most definitely over my head all the time, the chemicals that we are putting in our water and our food, the mercury fillings that we put in our own heads, in our teeth, that when the dentists take them out of our teeth and put them in the trash can, men in hazmat suits have to come in to remove them. I don't know why a man would have to wear a hazmat suit just to take out the trash when it's perfectly safe to put them in our heads right next to our brains. We're doing all kinds of weird things and always, always outing ourselves as being wrong. You know, so in the 80s, for example, where there was this whole low fat, everything had to be low fat. We thought that was the answer to everything. Well, come to find out, our bodies need fat and our brains need fat. And we need vitamins A, D, E, and K. We need all these fat-soluble vitamins. Butter is good for you. Butter is excellent for your health. And so we have these huge paradigm shifts all the time, and it usually involves us trying to bypass nature, thinking we have the solution to all your problems, and then later finding out, oh, no, we were wrong. Please don't eat that weird chemical, not at all natural margarine. You should just go back to eating just natural butter from Mother Nature. There's also something called confirmation bias, which is the tendency to search for, interpret, or prioritize information in a way that confirms your beliefs or hypothesis. So this can cause all kinds of problems for researchers and people writing even scientific papers, where they'll have a theory, they try to prove the theory, and then they start getting into confirmation bias, and they start selectively, like, cherry-picking through the research just to pull out the things that actually support their theory, and that is called confirmation bias. And a lot of us do this every day. I think about symbolism. And how a lot of pagans, you know, we love to cut an apple in half and be like, look, the seeds naturally form this five-pointed star. It's a natural pentagram. It's a sign from the universe. Everything is connected. But when I was growing up in a Christian household, we did the same thing, and I was taught that this was a sign of the resurrection. This is a reminder that Jesus died for our sins, because can't you see these 5 points? The one at the top is the crown of thorns that Jesus wore, and then the 4 out to the sides are his hands and feet, which were pierced through with nails, and this is a reminder of that. I've seen Christians say that it represents the star, the North Star, and that we are it's just a reminder to, you know, to follow Christ. I've seen similar things with candy canes. I'm halfway through my episode, and I'm getting the 90-second thing, the 90-second message. I'm so sorry. I wish I would have organized this better for you guys, because I've run out of time. I wanted to talk about scientists like Rupert Sheldrake and Albert Einstein, who were actually scientists who believed in God and who believe Rupert Sheldrake is still here. I wanted to talk about the power of prayer and how a Christian can pray for something and create a miracle, whereas a witch might do a spell for that same thing and call it magic. And I think that the only difference between the two things is their belief, and that the belief is actually the engine behind what is making the phenomenon happen. So the Christian believes that in praying to Jesus, XYZ will occur, and it does. I believe it's not because of Jesus that it occurs, but because of the power of the Christian's belief. I think the same is true. I think the same is true of witches. It's not maybe perhaps the magic that's working or the correspondences, but their belief. Gee whiz, I'm so sorry I ran out of time today, guys, and I just rambled, and I had to tell that story about the dresser, and I really, maybe I'll have to revisit this. You let me know. Please let me know. Write to me on Facebook. Send me an email. Was this just a hot mess? Do you want me to go on about it or elaborate or say it in a more clear, calm way? I totally will do that for you. Just let me know, and I will be back here next Tuesday talking at you. In the meantime, much love. Peace.